Thanks for joining us. My name is Ibrahim Sani. We're looking at the academic sector today. This is because following that particular SPM announcement a few weeks ago, a small majority of students following the SPM results do not want to pursue the tertiary education. We want to know why. We want to see what are the options made available. Also, coincidentally, a few weeks ago as well, the Prime Minister met a few e-hailing companies as well. Perhaps that is another idea or a route for Malaysian students to go after. So to unpack all of this, we have in the studio Professor Dr. Pradeep Nair, the Deputy Vice Chancellor and Chief Academic Officer at Taylor's University. Dr. Pradeep, thanks for taking the time to speak with us. Let's do this whole analysis in terms of what the academic landscape looks like these days. During my time, back in the Neolithic age, if you don't go to university, you're doomed. Do you feel that parents today and students today have that kind of notion that tertiary education is a must?
Well, I think every parent would love to have their children go through tertiary education and graduate with a university degree. Whether that's something that the young people also aspire, I think that's the big question mark. The statistics seem to indicate that more than 50% of our Form 5 students do not want to pursue tertiary education after their SPM. That's a very alarming statistic compared to the fact that this number was closer to about 35% 2 years ago. Now it's grown beyond 50%. I think it's a tragedy for Malaysia because when you have a workforce that is not highly educated, that may not possess the complete set of skills needed for an economic development, then we are staring at 30, 40, 50 years down the road. People retiring with lowly paid jobs, the country becoming less competitive in terms of talent availability. And so there must be something done urgently to inspire and attract the youth of this country to pursue their education.
Is it because of no familial support in terms of financial support? This is because you're looking at the majority of Malaysians right now fall under the B40, M40 category. They might not necessarily get, allowances from their parents right after SPM, and therefore they have to self-sustain. Is that a thinking that they're doing right now when it comes to trying to pursue a tertiary education?
Well, I think there are multiple factors. There are social factors, there are economic factors, and I can't call myself an expert to talk about the economic factors. But you're right. I think the gig economy has certainly opened up new opportunities for young people. And they now see that without having to go through 3 or 4 years of university education and then only begin working, they can get almost the same salary as a fresh graduate by being a Grab driver or a Foodpanda delivery man or lady. And so the options to the young people are widely available today that they are asking themselves, why should I go through 3 or 4 years, slog my way for a starting salary that is, probably going to be less or about the same?
They don't see the, trajectory in terms of financial propensity to earn if you have a tertiary degree. I literally just went through some of the data from DOSM, using the Open DOSM, last week. Tertiary education holders tend to make at least 3 times more than a secondary holder over the course of their lifetime.
So in Malaysia, perhaps not. Over the course of their lifetime, certainly yes. But when you were 17 years old, Ibrahim, or when I was 17 years old, we never looked that far, you see. So we need to understand that the youth must be supported, must be guided. We can't expect them to think 30 years down the road. I think they look at what is here and now and what's in front of them and what excites them and what to be able to do the things that they are passionate about. So certainly I think the opportunity here is for government as well as other stakeholders, to take a hard look at the education and the manner in which education is delivered in our universities, to be able to inspire young people. So let me give you an example of what I mean by the perhaps educational transformation is what is needed. If the young people, whether they are Gen Y or Gen Z or even upcoming Gen Alpha, these are people that want to learn in context. The idea of sitting in a classroom or in a huge lecture theatre, listening to someone ramble away for 2 hours of a lecture, it is something that, you know, is unthinkable for the young people today. And you find that we need to have an education value proposition that aligns with the expectations of the young people.
So that's why this Taylor's 100% online postgraduate program is one of those solutions that you're bringing to the market. Maybe talk more to that effect.
Okay, so with regards to online education, I think the context is slightly different. Now, in the World Economic Forum this year predicted that by 2027, there would be a big gap between existing jobs and jobs of the future. Something like 83 million jobs will disappear over the next 5 years, and probably about 69 new types of jobs are likely to appear. So there is a gap between the number of new jobs and the number of jobs that are going to be lost. And it's a deficit of about 14 million, which works out to something like one in every four jobs are likely to be disrupted by the year 2027. If I were to look at the number of jobs that are going to disappear due to automation, that's something like 44%. And the prediction is that 44-45% of the skills, the core skills required for the current job is likely to change. So look at you and I, half of what you do to do your job so well may become irrelevant 5 years from now. So obviously there is a skills gap. And I want to also say this, between 2019 and 2021, in terms of unemployment was twice as much amongst people with basic education compared with those with higher education. So if we're looking at unemployment, the people that are likely to be affected are those that earned their degrees or their diplomas 10, 15, 20 years ago. And I think there is an opportunity, given the statistics that I've shared with you, there's an opportunity for the existing workforce to reskill and upskill themselves, right? So what has changed? I think the COVID-19 pandemic forced everyone to try and learn to learn using technology. Prior to that, online learning or distance learning was considered inferior compared to face-to-face campus-based learning. I think today, after the pandemic, hundreds of millions of people have become familiar with technology. They have come to accept digital learning, anytime, anywhere, real-time learning as a way in which they can learn new things compared to the traditional way of going to a hotel, in a function room, attending a 3-day seminar, or going back to the university, quitting your job and taking up your master's, etc. Now, so we saw that online learning is something that is expected to grow. In 2019 alone, the new investments into online learning was above $19 billion. And by 2025, the online education market is expected to be worth $350 billion. So there's this huge explosion in making learning available digitally to the masses. And that's why we introduced our fully asynchronous online learning programs.
Okay, that's why I want to learn more about the kind of urgency to address this Malaysia's growing talent gap. Many of the CEOs that come on the show talk about the fact that they can't hire the right talents. Also, when I look at some of the unemployment statistics, especially youth unemployment, it's actually quite high. So there's definitely a gap between the demand and supply right now. How does an organisation like Taylor's University address this particular gap?
So let's look at where the gaps are. The key drivers that's driving the skills gap, things like digital transformation in organizations, green transition, generative AI, automation. These are some of the key drivers, right? Which means that there is a need for the existing workforce to reskill or upskill themselves into these areas and make themselves relevant to the jobs or the skills required, the new skills required to the jobs that they currently hold, right? And this is where I believe it is important to offer a program that not only addresses the skills gap, but a program that helps match with the learning behavior of adults. Most people are used to TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, nothing more than 3 to 5 minutes or even a minute in terms of knowledge consumption. So if you look at the knowledge consumption pattern among adults today, you find that many of them don't want to go on campus to learn because they can't afford it. They can't afford to lose their jobs and their incomes. They want to have an education that does not disrupt their work-life balance and their time with family and friends. So what we are introducing is the concept of nano-learning. Let me put it very simply. If I can take 1 hour of lecture, right, 60 minutes, and break it up into small bites of nothing more than 3 to 5 minutes of information or of knowledge, and people get to consume knowledge in smaller bites, then I'm able to now allow you to learn perhaps in between your meetings, perhaps while you're having breakfast, perhaps during your lunch break. So we want to free people from the constraint of time and space, right? Space, it's fully online. You don't have to go physically to a campus. Time, because I think that a typical adult, different people have different types of jobs. They have different type of leisure activities. They have different time that they can allocate to learning. So when we follow nano learning, you can take 5 bites if you have time for 5 bites of information, or you can take 7 bites or just 1 bite, and you can watch some of the lectures, or you can watch some of the, or you can take in some of the information as you go. And we found this to be tremendously beneficial to today's working adult and their very, very busy lifestyle and the need for them to retain their work-life balance.
And of course, with this nano-learning, it's not the first time that, you know, organisations like yourselves are doing it. What makes your nano-learning mechanism a little bit more special compared to other teaching providers?
Okay, so nano-learning has been widely available outside of Malaysia. In fact, outside of the region, Southeast Asia. In Southeast Asia and Asia, most online programs tend to convert the bulk of information taught in a traditional classroom into a digital format, right? So it's PDF downloads, it's videos, it's texts that have to be read, etc., etc., without concern for time. So the onus is on the learner to break up information by themselves. But what if the information is broken up already and engineered in such a way and scaffolded in such a way that you can take in information in smaller amounts and allow you to be relieved from this constraint of space and time? So I believe that what we have tried to do is probably quite revolutionary for Malaysia, The statistics are beginning to show. We just launched it in January this year. We just completed July, and we've got over 100 full-time sign-ups for our master's degree programs. What is even more heartening is that when they complete each module, the return rate is 100%. So we are seeing almost no attrition. Because in online learning, one of the biggest challenges is dropouts. Mm. And not just dropouts, but delays in completion. We're seeing on-time completion at a very high rate of 95%, and we are seeing 100% continuation from one module to another module to another module. So I think we've hit a sweet spot. I think we've found a way to deliver knowledge to a busy executive and allow them to learn according to the kind of lifestyle that they want to live. So I think this allows them to be able to upskill without having to give up so much of their own time.
Okay. Do you feel that that is the situation right now that is working? How do you measure, I guess, affinity towards such a program? What kind of feedback are you collecting to ensure that these are the programs that is required by the market?
Okay. So feedback. So we do regular feedback sessions with our students online. And the feedback's been really good. But I want to talk a little bit about the way adults learn today, right? One is the concept of nano learning, the ability to take in knowledge in bite sizes. But the other is one of the most challenging things when you do your master's or when you want to learn something is that learning can be a very lonely journey for an adult. Because, you know, kids want to go somewhere, wife wants to go somewhere, but you've got to finish this because there's a deadline for you to submit. And you realize that sometimes you're alone, right? Which is why when we designed this, we took into account the idea of social learning and the need for us not to feel alone and lonely in this journey. So we've done that in two ways. Obviously, with digital technology today, there's a lot of opportunities for forums, real-time communication, chats between students. But we've moved from the traditional model of a lecturer or professor providing information to student to having an intermediary between the professor and the student called a learning facilitator. And so for every one of our master's programs, we've got a learning facilitator with a service level agreement in terms of response time. How quickly can this person revert back to a doubt, a question? You know, maybe there's something you're not clear about. And then the concept of setting you up to succeed by ensuring that before you send in your assignments, send us a draft. Send a draft to the learning facilitator. He or she will probably read through and see, have you really address the questions that were posed, or perhaps there are gaps in your responses. So we try to set students up to succeed rather than, you know, you read the stuff, you got the exam, and then you suddenly realize that your assignment was way off what was really expected. So the concept of learning facilitators is something that we learned from some of in the US. I think there's a company operating out of Singapore that actually provides almost real-time, support and feedback for students. And this person supports the professor who's teaching the course.
All right, we'll go for one short break. When we come back, we'll discuss a little bit more with Talis University. Thanks for staying on. I have with me in the studio Professor Dr. Pradeep Nair, the Deputy Vice Chancellor of Talis University, here to explore some of the ideas on why we need to reskill and upskill. Very recently, we saw a communique coming up from the Prime Minister's office saying that upskilling and reskilling amongst, say, for instance, P-hailing and E-hailing riders is actually crucial. Dr. Pradeep, maybe you can talk to us in terms of what are the tools that are being made available for the mass right now when it comes to upskilling and reskilling in order for them to meet the requirements of the job market?
So let me begin by trying to break this down, right? When we talk about upskilling and reskilling, there is one aspect of it is trying to get someone with a bachelor's degree to upgrade their qualifications to a master's, or someone with a diploma to upgrade their qualifications. So the upgrading of qualifications is one aspect of upskilling that or reskilling that we're talking about. But not everybody has the time or the resources to do a master's or to do an entire bachelor degree. And hence comes this concept of what we call micro-credentials. Mm. Micro-credentials are smaller parts of a bachelor's or a diploma or a master's degree. They are often shorter duration, shorter in content, but very, very specific to the acquisition of a particular type of knowledge or skill. The micro-credentials are, to me, what is driving this huge explosion in online learning. And to the question you asked about the kind of skills that whether the P-hailing or E-hailing riders, or for that matter, any working person today, it would be the micro-credentialing. So are they able to access short courses? It could be something like, you know, requiring 10 hours of learning, 5 hours of learning, courses that can then be credentialed. And hopefully with this credential, we could stack them up and lead to a diploma or a bachelor's or a master's degree. So it could be stackable and leading to a qualification, or it could be standalone. And this is where, when we designed our online learning courses, we made them stackable. And next year, we will launch using one of the features of our learning management system called the catalog. We break up our master degree programs into smaller chunks and offer these chunks to the public, right? Firstly, it makes them more affordable. Secondly, it saves them a lot more time. It allows them to acquire real-time, skills and knowledge required for their job. And nothing is lost because it's stackable, and as you finish various levels of these courses in the catalog, you can earn the credits that allow you to eventually get your master's if you so choose. Mm-hmm. And I believe that's the way of the future now. That when you look at the Googles of the world, we look at McKinsey, you look at Deloitte, you look at all these big companies, they're beginning to really say, okay, fine, I know you've got your degree, but show me what else have you got, right? So mm-hmm. I think there is this real demand from employers today for their workers to show that additional certifications and qualifications that they have obtained. So a simple example would be someone who's been in PR, right? Or someone who's been in journalism, right? Do you have a certificate in digital marketing, or you have digital video making, for example, right? If you have these additional certificates and qualifications, you stand a much higher chance of being employed, a much better chance of being able to adapt to the changing workplace requirements, and most importantly, a less likelihood of losing your job.
Fantastic. Final comments before I conclude our conversation right now?
Well, I believe that the online learning space has become a very widely accepted and legitimate pathway for learning to take place.
And if people want to learn more, how do they go about?
So if they want to learn more, just go to our website and look at our fully online master's degree programs. And you can get that information. We have 5 intakes every year. And it's based on a rolling intake. So, if January is too busy for you, you come in March. If March is too busy, you come in July, and so on and so forth. So I think the only way to continue to stay relevant is to keep learning.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. That was Professor Dr. Pradeep Nair, the Deputy Vice Chancellor, as well as the Chief Academic Officer at Taylor's University. If you want to learn more about these kind of resources, just head off to their website. Also, you can learn more on astroawani.com. My name is Ibrahim Sani. Catch you in the next one.